Good morning and welcome to the Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte, Florida. This is a live medical talk show in which you're invited to participate. If you have a question or comment along the way, please call us at area code 941-206-1580 or toll free at 888-441-1580. And now, here's your host of the show, Dr. Elizabeth Triana.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. And it's so good to be back. The last two Fridays, we have played encore performances, as we say, or repeats or reruns, because we were out. And one of the great things that I was doing was I was at the Cleveland Clinic, Cleveland Heart Lab Conference, which was a great conference, wasn't it?
It was a wonderful conference. Yeah.
It was really great in Cleveland, Ohio. Oh, my goodness. That place is so neat. We also, the conference, I met incredible doctors who are also going to be on our program, and we'll be lining them up. The conference dealt with the whole thing is where inflammation meets lipids. Remember, lipids, cholesterol, triglycerides, broad-based strategies for risk reduction. And this was their fifth annual symposium, which was, as I said, fantastic. It was the leading edge. As you all know, of my radio audience, I'm the only lipidologist who has boards in lipidology. I'm a clinical lipidologist. I'm board certified in that area. And that deals with the prevention of heart attack, stroke, and diabetes. So the Cleveland Heart Lab, I do advanced lipid testing through them to check to see what is your risk. You know, as we have said before, you might look great on the outside, but on the inside, well, we want to see if you have inflammation.
Right, right. And that's the whole idea of the conference. But it wasn't just all work. We had a very nice evening at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, which is, for Elvis fans, was terrific.
Oh, yeah, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame was incredible. It's right on the lake there. It's all glass, and it was designed by a very, very famous architect, I.M.P., P.E.I. is his last name. And he did the a structure in front of the Louvre in Paris. It looks like a pyramid. It's a glass pyramid. And this is all glass, and it's gorgeous because you can look out over the city. And because of also Breast Awareness Month, they had one of the towers lit up in pink at night. And the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you see the history of rock and roll. And I have always, for all of you out there who are diehard, I'm a diehard Elvis Presley fan. And they had you know, memorabilia, one of his suits. He wasn't that tall. I thought he was really tall, but he wasn't.
It really is interesting to see how small some of these performers were or are. When you see the costumes that they wear, their suits.
Right. Michael Jackson, they had suits of his, really small. Even Beyonce, who, you know, she has a tiny little waist. Her outfits are gorgeous. They had clothes from Mahalia Jackson and all kinds of memorabilia, guitars. There's over 200 guitars there, different famous people. They had a tribute to the Beatles. It was just, you could spend hours there. We didn't get to see it all at all.
My uncle, Michael Galloway, has his office in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. He works for Ameritech, which is the phone company up there.
Uh-huh.
Well, when I went to visit him the last time, he took me all through the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and we got to see it all. And I actually got to touch Jimi Hendrix's couch that he had in his living room of his home. And I was like, this is sacred because, yeah, I love Jimi Hendrix.
So this was really very interesting and so much information packed in 2 days worth of conference that even during the lunch hour, they have a speaker and you sit there and you're eating your lunch listening to a speaker. So literally the conference is from 7 o'clock till about 6 o'clock in the evening. And Cleveland was very nice. The old buildings are beautiful, just gorgeous. So
they turned the air conditioning on too. It was pretty warm here, but when we got there, it was cool.
It was nice and cool. So I really, if you ever get to go to Cleveland, that's incredible. And the Cleveland Clinic is over the top amazing.
Yes.
I hope to move to that area someday. My family is all up there, and there's a suburb there called Strongsville that is just a beautiful. It just looks like your quintessential American town. Absolutely beautiful there.
Well, it is very nice, and they've done a lot. They have even a casino downtown. It's really nice. So I really recommend, if you have any interest in learning what is your risk for a heart attack and stroke, you really should come to see me so I can evaluate what is your risk. Part of that is a complete history and physical. Part of that is, it's not just looking at your cholesterol. There's more to it to that. And, you know, people say your lipids, look at your lipids. Well, it's more than just the lipids. Do you have inflammation?
Right. The Cleveland Clinic has developed several markers.
Biomarkers.
To help physicians evaluate whether there is inflammation going on and how bad it is.
And so if you think that your cholesterol is fine, but you have inflammation in your arteries, then you need to look further. Now, in the Bale-Dohnine method, which I use in my office, it's a method to assess, to educate the patient, look for disease. Once you find that the patient has plaque, then you aggressively treat that. You don't wait for an event. 50% of people show up in the emergency room with a heart attack, never had chest pains. Their cholesterol wasn't that high. They lived life. They thought they were healthy. And they end up with a heart attack and stroke. Well, and yet, with all the information that we have now, it's still the number one killer.
Right. Remember that one of the things that was pointed out at the meeting is that every 37 seconds, someone in our country has a heart attack.
Can you imagine that? So what are we waiting for? What are everyone? I mean, and it isn't just worry. I mean, we're not just worried about death. We're worried about disability. We want to have more good years, a better life, so we can enjoy. So we don't walk around with a major problem. So we're going to talk about today a very important condition called congestive heart failure. And I want everyone to really listen. And part of the Cleveland Heart Lab test, one of the tests is called Galactin 3, which will also check for fibrosis of the heart muscle. But first, let's do what body part am I? Because we know that a lot of people are listening and they want to call in. Just say your first name. You don't have to give your last name. And we're going to go ahead and give you what body part am I. Dr. Katzen, do you want to talk about what body part am I?
Well, I thought we wrote it out. Why don't we just be?
You want to read it? You want me to read it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here it goes.
This body part is, I am a little tiny bone with a very big name, which in Greek means a hammer. I am important so you can hear the world around me. What body part am I?
Okay, everybody, this one is really good. A tiny bone, which means in Greek hammer. Give us that name. Call us at 206-1580 or 888-441-1580. And just so everyone knows, what a cool deal it is to be able to listen to the radio show. It's streamed live on iHeartRadio. Just put in WCCF 1580 AM, right? And just...
That's right, WCCFAM.com.
Or you can go to your iHeart app, and it's 1580 AM.
That's right.
And there's been a marriage between iHeart and Clear Channel, because Clear Channel is changing its name to...
We have. We are now iHeart Media.
Right.
iHeart Media, which is great. Okay, so what body part am I? We'll say it again if anybody missed out. So we're going to talk about something that's actually unfortunately becoming very common. And that's a condition called congestive heart failure, also called heart failure, also called CHF.
Right.
Those are the letters. And why is this becoming more common now? Because we know that vascular disease, ischemic vascular disease, is the number one cause of heart failure. In other words, a patient will have a heart attack, and then that muscle doesn't work correctly. And hello, caller.
Yes.
Hi, caller. What's your first name? Yes. Great. What's your first name, caller?
Excuse me?
Yeah, you did great. What's your first name?
Phyllis.
Phyllis, thank you so much for calling. Do you have any questions?
Okay. No, I don't. Thank you.
Okay, sweetheart. Take care. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. All right, the malleolus. That's great. And you know that's important. That's in your ear.
Right. Without that, you're not hearing anything.
Right. So that's really good. That was great, Phyllis. Oh, wow. That was quick, too. So congestive heart failure. Everyone, listen in. What is the causes of congestive heart failure? What is heart failure? Well, the heart is a pump.
Right. If the pump can't put out what it's supposed to be putting out for whatever physiologic needs the body has, it puts out less. And when it puts out less, the input side of the pump has to back up. And when that input side of the pump backs up, people get swelling in their feet. They get liquid. Liquid in their lungs, and they get shortness of breath. They can frequently, if this is related to coronary artery disease, they will frequently have angina with this as well.
Angina meaning chest pains.
Right.
So when the pump doesn't work, like any pump that doesn't work, the fluid backs up.
Right.
So where is it going to back up to? The most is your lungs. And the fluid backs up into your veins, and you may get fluid and swelling in your legs, and you might see the veins in your neck swell up too.
That's correct. So the swelling in the feet is pretty obvious because the pump has got to suck the blood all the way from your ankles up to your heart to be able to pump it out.
So if that pump, and there's two types of congestive heart failure, there's a systolic, which means the heart just can't pump out enough blood. It's weak. It's not pushing out the blood. Or there is diastolic, where the heart can't accept enough blood to even pump out.
Right. Something happens in the chambers that doesn't allow the chambers to fill. So that at each stroke of the heart, the blood can be pumped peripherally. Now, you can have that happen because of valvular disease where certain parts of the heart have incompetent valves, or the main blood vessel, the aorta, may have an incompetent valve as well.
So we know that heart failure, it usually doesn't occur right away, though it can. And its most common causes are coronary artery disease, atherosclerosis,
and a variety of other things. That can cause heart failure that people don't really think about. And that's one of the things we wanted to talk about today.
Past heart attacks can cause. Also, we know the silent disease, high blood pressure. You know, a lot of patients come in and say, well, geez, I feel good. Well, what do I need to worry about checking my blood pressure? Well, because that extra strain on your heart in the future can cause you to have congestive heart failure.
Oh, no question about that. And it's no different than if you lived out in the country and had water supply was from a well, and you try and put the pressure up on the pump, and the pump finally gives out and can't make that much pressure. So that it's important for people to have their blood pressure under control. That's a very critical thing. Because the heart of the heart has to work with each stroke, the more muscle it needs to contract. And heart failure frequently results in a thinning of the muscle because of a variety of other extraneous causes other than vascular causes.
Right. But also we know lung disease can cause heart failure. If you have a bad heart valve or if you get an infection on your heart valve, there's a condition called endocarditis. People who use IV drugs will get an infection in their heart valve, or even people who don't use drugs can get infections in their heart valve. If the valve is seated, the valve can stop working.
Well, and, sure. And if people may not realize this, but every time you brush your teeth, and it's important to brush your teeth, of course, you discharge bacteria into your blood supply. And if you have an underlying weakness someplace in your body, like in the heart valve, so some of those bacteria can take hold and start to grow there and then further destroy the valve.
So that's really important. We've discussed this when Amy Doneen was on the show, the importance of having good oral hygiene, keeping your teeth in good health. Bad teeth, I tell patients, it's going to lead to a bad heart.
No question about that. People who have poor oral hygiene have a very serious risk of increased heart attack or stroke.
Another cause of heart failure is birth defects. Certain heart birth defects at birth can also cause congestive heart failure.
Right.
Certain holes in the heart, like the ventricle, atrial, septal defects.
And also a variety of other misplaced vessels that are supposed to be carrying blood one place that are either overlapping the chambers of the heart, like in tetralogy of an entity called tetralogy of Fallot, or just the non-existence of vessels. In other words, vessels that were supposed to be arterial become venous, and we call that the total anomalous venous return. But
What about alcohol and drug abuse?
Right. Alcohol is a very serious cause of myocarditis or cardiomyopathy. In other words, the toxic effect of the alcohol on the heart causes the heart muscle to disintegrate, to become smaller, and to become less...
And weak.
And weaker. And also that what happens after that is that the main chamber dilates trying to compensate for its weakness. And then we have what we call a alcoholic cardiomyopathy or myocardiopathy. Those two words that you sort of bounce around interchangeably.
Myo means muscle. So if the muscle is weakened, your heart doesn't pump. Therefore, that leads to congestive heart failure. There's also heart damage secondary to diabetes.
That's correct. Diabetes. If you have diabetes, you have the same risk of having another heart attack as somebody's already had a heart attack.
That's very so. Remember, part of when I see a patient in my office is I assess what is their risk for heart attack or stroke,
right.
And I don't just look at the lipids. It's the whole picture. It's if you have inflammation. Do you have a history of congestive heart failure? Do you have valvular disease?
Well,
do you have heart rhythm problems?
Right. One of the things that happens when the heart dilates is that the conduction mechanism, which is like a nervous system that tells this part of the heart to contract and that part of the heart to relax, that conduction system does not function well. And so there are generally an unusual amount of unusual beats. And these unusual beats are very dangerous because they can turn into what we call a ventricular tachycardia, where the heart muscle is just beating on its own, or into something called ventricular fibrillation, which you've seen in the movies when they shock people and whatever, that's to get them out of ventricular fibrillation. So that people who have a progressive congestive heart failure need to have some kind of a monitor built in to monitor their beats, so that in case they have an abnormal beat, they can be the unit will shock them. And there are indwelling pacers and there's also external pacers.
Yeah, there's a apparatus called a life vest that can be worn, and it detects the rhythm and will shock the heart externally. And it's worn by the patient 24 hours a day, except when they take a shower. And there's also pacemakers, defibrillators that can be implanted in the patient, which is also needed to shock the heart. So we know that heart rhythm problems affect what we call the cardiac output. And we're going to talk about one way to look to find that. Also, thyroid disorders. There are conditions such as hyperthyroidism or hypothyroidism, low functioning, high functioning, where it gets to the point where it's so severe that it affects the rhythm or the heart muscle.
Certainly. Some people will have such poor thyroid function that they'll actually go into a coma, a mixed edema coma. On the one hand, and then on the other hand, some people's thyroid function is exaggerated and out of control, not being controlled by their pituitary anymore. They're making so much thyroid hormone that their heart is just trying to beat itself to death.
So if anybody has a question, you can call us. This is Dr. Elizabeth Triana, Dr. Katzen. We're on 206-1580. The show, again, is The Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues. Give us a call. I think it's really important. One way that we assess the heart is with an echocardiogram.
Right. Because
explain that to us, Dr. Katzen. What does that see?
Well, the echocardiogram is like an ultrasound machine. It's just like a fish finder on a boat. And we just put a probe over the chest, look at the heart valves, measure the thickness of the wall of the heart, and measure the heart in both its contracted state, that's the end systole, and its relaxed state, which is diastole, and compute what they call the ejection fraction. The normal ejection fraction should be more than 50%. In other words, of all the blood that comes into that ventricle, 50% of it should be squeezed out with every heartbeat. People who have heart failure can have a much reduced ejection fraction, sometimes 30% down to 20%. I've never seen anybody less than 15%. Sometimes people will have acute congestive heart failure as an acute event related to some kind of toxicity or infection or whatever, and they'll temporarily have a marked reduction in their ejection fraction. There are numerous drugs the cardiologist can use to help the myocardium recover from that kind of an insult. Those drugs are called ARBs.
We're going to talk about the treatment for heart failure, but one of the ways to diagnose it, again, is we want to talk about the echocardiogram, because the ejection fraction, if people hear the word ejection fraction or EF, or cardiac output, that's very important.
Right, but we also measure the fractional shortening, so that there's sometimes somebody can have a normal fractional shortening and not have a good ejection fraction because they have some valve that's not opening up, or a valve that stays open doesn't close.
So that's really important to understand. And we're going to talk about the common symptoms of heart failure, treatment, what you can do to prevent it, or if you have it, what can you do so you can live longer and live better. But first, we're going to take our break.
You're listening to The Slippery Slope of Lipids and Other Medical Issues, brought to you by the Triana Prevention Center in Port Charlotte. We encourage you to visit their new website, which is TrianaPreventionCenter.com. That's T-R-I-A-N-A Prevention Center, all one word, .com. To catch up on previous shows, there's an archive going back to the beginning of this show covering a wide variety of topics. Dr. Triana is accepting new patients currently, and we'll ask the doctor to give her phone number out in just a little bit. In the meantime, if you'd like to call this program, our numbers are 941-206-1580 or toll-free at 888-441-1580. You can also listen live at WCCFAM.com at iHeartRadio. And now back to Dr. Elizabeth Triana and Dr. Katzen.
Thank you, Zane. Yes, today's topic is so important. Congestive heart failure. This is very important for everyone to understand. Listen in. We need to try to prevent this. It's a leading cause of heart failure after heart attack. Hello, caller. Oh, it's a hang up. Okay. I guess maybe we didn't catch it. That's okay. So if you have a question, remember, if you're shy, you don't want to call on the phone, you can call at 206-1580. But if you're too shy, you also can email us at askdrtriana at trianapreventioncenter.com. Triana is T-R-I-A-N-A. So what are the symptoms that we're going to look for if someone has congestive heart failure? Well, the hallmark symptom, shortness of breath.
The hallmark symptom and shortness of breath is in those people who do not have a coronary artery cause of the heart failure. Because if you have a coronary artery cause of heart failure, you most likely will have had angina and been treated for angina. But progressive shortness of breath is the most common cause and, the most common symptom.
Right. And you would be short of breath with exertion or shorter breath. Even there's different classes of heart failure. It's rated by what activities you can do. If you get shorter breath, of course, walking from your bed to the bathroom, that's considered severe. If you get shorter breath, brushing your teeth. If you wake up in the middle of the night, shorter breath. If you're not able to lay flat in bed and you get shorter breath. If you have frequent coughing or wheezing, bloating.
Right. And also, if you start to lose your appetite, that can be a very important symptom, because the reason why people will lose their appetite because they get shorter breath while they're eating.
Or where they're also because of congestion, they can get nauseous. If they see a sudden weight gain, and we're going to talk about part of the treatment of congestive heart failure is getting a daily weight. So if you get up at night, you have to urinate frequently. That is also part of the symptoms of congestive heart failure.
Right, because the body is trying, when you're resting and lying flat, the body is trying to compensate and get rid of all that water that you accumulated during the day by being upright and having gravity make your feet swell.
If you have fatigue, weakness can also be a sign. Confusion, decreased alertness, rapid or irregular heart rate. If you're sitting down, all of a sudden you feel your heart rate pulsing, you need to check your pulse.
Right, because a lot of times the unusual rhythm of the heart is not steady. It comes and goes particularly during the day and in the night. And a lot of people just don't even feel it. And that's one of the reasons why we put a monitor on people who we suspect have this heart failure, so that we can watch their rhythm over an extended period of time, like for a 24-hour period.
What I tell the patients is this, where if we do a heart monitor, it's to check your electrical conduction system over a 24-hour period. A lot of patients feel that an EKG is sufficient, but an EKG is just a snapshot, and it might not catch. If someone's short of breath or they have palpitations, it may not catch in that instant what the rhythm is of the heart. We need a little more time to evaluate.
Well, last week we had a patient who had a relatively, not a normal EKG, but when we put what they call this Holter monitor on and watched them for 24 hours, the rhythms that were demonstrated on the Holter were nowhere to be seen on a standard EKG.
Dr. Katzen, that monitor that they wear, do they wear it and go about their normal daily living activities, or are they in?
Yes,
do they
except have, you can't go in the shower with it.
Okay, well, yeah.
Yeah, it's only 24 hours.
Okay.
And there's leads, and what it does is it captures for 24 hours the rhythm. Now, even with a 24-hour monitor of the electrical conduction system of the heart, even then, sometimes patient says, well, I didn't feel anything during the time. There are what we called event monitors where we can put on a patient, and we have those also, where we can, if the patient feels something, they press a button, and then it'll record at that instant the heart rhythm. So there's different ways to evaluate the heart, the electrical conduction system, and this is one very, it just gives a wealth of information, especially if someone is in congestive heart failure.
Software is designed to pick up unusual rhythms. It does, because really 90% of the heartbeats that people have, even in this situation, are relatively normal. But it's that 10% that's the killer.
So the important thing is, if you're diagnosed with heart failure, congestive heart failure, and your doctor prescribes certain medications, we're going to talk about what are those what medications are usually given to these patients and why they're important. To start off with, we're going to start off with a very common medications called ACE inhibitors or angiotensin II receptor blockers. And what is the? Why do we use these? These are to open up your arteries and lower your blood pressure. You're trying to protect your heart.
Trying to reduce the workload.
Reduce the workload of the heart. So we can use these medications called ACE inhibitors. Some of those you might hear by their trade name or generic name, Lotensin, Ramipril. You'll hear also Losartan, Benicar. Those are angiotensin receptor blockers. But there's a lot of enalapril is also an older ACE inhibitor. These are usually standards of care for treating patients with heart failure.
Right. And one of the most important medicines is to control the amount of salt. To get rid of, because salt retains water.
And we're going to talk about that too. Where to look for the salt, and it's so important. The other medications we're talking about is beta blockers. And why are beta blockers important? Because our heart, you know, what's fascinating, when we were at the Cleveland Clinic conference, one of the head of cardiology at Harvard, Dr. Brunwald, who wrote a very famous book on the heart. And in 1964, he wrote an article about how the heart also produces hormones. And it's by assessing now some of these hormones we know, by assessing these hormones, we can also check the status of the heart. One of those hormones that's, and one of the products of the hormones is called NT-proBNP. So it's a natriuretic peptide. It's a hormone. It's produced by the heart. But we also use beta blockers to block the effects of chemicals that can make your heart work too hard. And we can also, they used to use, not as much now, a medicine called Digitalis or Digoxin, which used to make your heartbeat stronger and more regular. Actually, the new research, they're not using Digitalis as much.
You know, they found after many centuries, because Digitalis is an old, old drug, and it was used in England, as it comes from a leaf of a tree called, I think, the foxglove.
Yes.
And people would just chew the leaf in order to get their heart to work stronger. That's the way it all started out. But they found now that people who are on Digitalis and these other drugs, that the long-term outlook is not as good for those people as we thought it was.
But remember, we are here to give you more knowledge. Remember, knowledge is power, about your health and what medicines you're taking. Ultimately, though, this is a decision between you and your physician on how the treatment is, what treatment you need, and how you're going to do your treatment. So we're giving you information. We're not telling you how to treat congestive heart failure, but we're giving you the gold standards. The other very important are diuretics, which people commonly call water pills.
Right, but a little bit more powerful water pills than people would normally be prescribing for hypertension or whatever.
And the most common that you hear people talk about is Lasix or furosemide. That's very important, and that's important to get rid of the excess fluid, again, making it easier for your heart to pump. And that's where we're going to talk about also about salt and fluid and volume. But another medication are vasodilators.
Right.
And those are like the nitroglycerin or long-acting nitroglycerins, and it makes it also easier for your heart to pump. Now, no part of your body system is standalone. So in other words, if your heart is not pumping good, guess what? This is going to affect your kidneys. If your kidneys get involved, your kidneys also are involved in producing hormones. You also have the adrenal glands, which produce hormones. And now we've talked a lot about hormones, but we have to understand that there is a whole balance here. One of those hormones produced is called aldosterone. And there are aldosterone blockers, and those are used to also block the effects of these hormones, such as aldactone or spironolactone.
Right. In order, once again, also to reduce the load
on the heart.
Yeah.
So
to give it a chance to heal.
And you have to remember, if you're prescribed medications and you decide on your own that you don't want to take it, please contact your prescriber, your physician. Find out what is it. Tell them what is the problem. Why did you stop the medication? What is the symptoms why you stopped it? Or why you don't want to take it anymore? Because all these medicines are for a specific reason to help your heart. A lot of patients say, you know, I don't believe in taking medications. I don't want to take a medicine. Well, you know, they were invented for a reason. And for a reason, they're targeting the abnormalities that are caused by the congestive heart failure. So it isn't just about medication. It's also about salt.
Salt is a real problem in treating congestive heart failure. The reason why is that salt dissolves in water and binds very closely and wants to retain that water, doesn't want you. So most of the diuretics, all the diuretics work on excreting salt one way or another.
So we have to look at, you don't want to put more salt in. So one of the hallmarks of treating patients, it isn't just about medicines, though medicines are extremely important and they play a very important role, but your diet, salt.
Right. It's really very important to be on a low salt diet, mainly because no matter how much medicine you take, you don't have 100% efficiency. So you're not going to get rid of all the salt that you eat.
And salt is very good at hiding in foods too. You might not realize how much is there.
Everything.
Yeah,
that's, you know, you have to look at the label, it goes back to reading the label.
Right, you have to be very salt conscious if you are a patient with congestive heart failure, and some places where salt hides are surprising.
Bread
is one thing. You know, when you go to a restaurant and the bread comes out and that crust is nice and crisp, the reason why it's crisp is because it's full of salt.
It has salt. So you look at, for example, if you have congestive heart failure, usually it's recommended a 2,000 milligram a day total of sodium salt in your diet. Now, remember, salt is sodium. So where do you find sodium? You know, sodium is in most foods that are processed. They're in bread. Sodium is in processed deli meats, sodium nitrates, ham, pastrami, Corned beef. Do you know a serving of corned beef?
Well, fortunately, people can look up and find how much sodium they are thinking, how much sodium they might be exposed to by eating anything. You can Google it and find out. But what Dr. Triano was talking about is true, that any processed food, anything in a can, will have more sodium than something fresh, that's for sure.
So a cup of spaghetti with marinara sauce can have up to 1,203 milligrams of sodium. You've shot over half of your allotment for the day with just one cup of that. So in other words, reading your labels and look at, you know, it's very misleading. You see, for example, I'm going to give you an example. A box of macaroni and cheese. Okay, just a box of macaroni and cheese. It says 560 milligrams of sodium.
Per serving.
Per serving. So that
box has three servings.
The box has three servings. So if somebody ate, and those are the small little boxes, you'd be getting a lot more sodium. So you have to look at the label. What is in that serving? You know, you can be surprised. You might see a bag or a can or a box and say, geez, I could eat this whole box. Well, guess what? That box might have three servings of sodium.
I think one of the things about the labels that you have to be very careful about is to make sure you look at the per serving allotment of whatever nutritional value there is, because on the back of some boxes and cans, it's not really very clear that this is per serving. And let's say there were five servings in the container or four servings in the container, and you get this much per serving.
Is potassium chloride still used as a, is it a good replacement for sodium chloride salt?
Well, the thing is, those are like those salt substitutes. You still have to be careful because sometimes they do put other, you can get too much potassium too in your diet. So that's really not, you know, that's not always the best thing to do.
But it's important when somebody is on a diuretic, a powerful diuretic, to replace the potassium, because sometimes the kidneys don't have trouble telling the difference between sodium and potassium. So they'll excrete both sodium and potassium, and it's really important to replace that potassium. And that's why frequently patients will be prescribed case potassium chloride tablets.
But you have to, you know, again.
But it's bitter. Have you tasted it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it has a very chemical taste.
Yeah.
If you're used to salt, it does not taste like salt.
Well, other things that you could do is for your diet is remove the salt shaker from your table. Just move it away. Use other seasonings like fresh herbs, basil, oregano, garlic. You can use parsley, rosemary, a little lemon juice or lime juice to make the food have more of a taste. Fresh herbs are the best. Try to eat fresh. Don't get canned foods. Most canned foods, salt is used as a preservative. You need to really look at that. And a lot of frozen foods, if they have sauces in them, you know, you'll say, oh, geez, broccoli with cheese sauce. Well, that has a lot of sodium in it too. And even if it says, for example, some people say, well, you know, I eat sea salt. Sea salt is still sodium. It doesn't have the iodine in it like other type of salts. Eat fresh. Chicken, meat, make it yourself. Grill it. Don't buy already processed or made meats. That also, they use salt as a preservative. And if you're going to eat snacks, eat fresh. Again, fruits and vegetables. And, I mean, don't put salt in. I mean, I remember my grandfather used to put salt on watermelon.
Oh, yeah, I still do that.
And on cantaloupe. So don't put salt. If you're going to have a snack.
I did the same thing.
My mom put salt in her beer. I mean,
I never heard of that.
Yeah, she did.
So, I mean, you're kind of defeating the purpose if you're going to put more salt. Avoid also salted crackers, muffins, biscuits, and a lot of those, like people who make cakes or pies, a lot of those mixes have a lot of salt in them.
The salt is just used to hold things together. It's almost like a mortar.
I've got to tell you, I love Mrs. Dash, though, as a seasoning. It's something you can shake on. I know fresh herbs are best, but I really like Mrs. Dash.
Yes, it tastes good.
Mm-hmm. No sodium, just flavor.
I haven't tried it. But then again, when you look at the label, sometimes they'll give you the percentage. They'll say the percentage daily value, like for a daily consumption. So if that daily value says 20%, bad. That is way too much sodium.
That's 20% of a normal person. That's
of a normal person.
That's not 20% of somebody in congestive heart failure. It's very, very, it's difficult for a person who is in congestive heart failure to stick to the, to just get that 2,000 milligrams
a
day. It's not an easy thing to do. But I think once you get used to it, it's something you can live with. And it'll if it helps you feel healthy and stronger and being able to do everything else you want to do in life, then maybe the trade-off is worth it.
The other thing, when you go out to dinner, be careful with anything that's pickled, smoked, cured, or prepared with soy sauce or broth. Broth can have a lot of salt, too. You have to check that.
Oh, no. There goes my barbecue.
Oh. Well, you don't have congestive heart failure.
Well, true. But,
but still, salt also affects your blood pressure. That's really important. How about gravies and cream sauces? Oh, my goodness.
Well, the next time you go to a barbecue, just do a little research about how much salt is in each order. So you wouldn't believe it.
So what have we learned today? If it tastes good, don't eat it.
No,
I'm
no,
only
no.
Kidding.
No. Make it fresh.
Yeah.
Make
you're
going to
have plenty of good taste, but just make sure it's not salty.
So another hallmark, talking about salt and fluids, many people with congestive heart failure, their fluid is restricted to how much they can drink.
Right. And that's one of the reasons why it's important for somebody who is in congestive heart failure to weigh themselves every day, because you can your weight can start to creep up in a very subtle way that you don't even notice it.
If you gain more than 2 pounds, that's a big red flag. You need to check. If you start swelling in your legs, if you start getting more shorter breath than usual, that is very important. You need to contact your physician. So this is all really important. You need to weigh yourself daily, daily, and keep a log. Put a little piece of paper. Keep a log. Write it next to it, where you have your scale. Use the same scale. Watch that.
Another, if you're taking your own blood pressure at home, one of the most, there's a very another very important sign, and that is the difference between the upper number and the lower number, which is called the pulse pressure, because that gives you an idea about what your heart is capable of pumping. So if that pulse pressure begins to get smaller, then maybe your heart is sinking back into failure.
And talking about pulse, learn to take your pulse. Learn to count. You know, it's not hard. People learn to take their pulse, check their radial pulse and their wrist. Learn to take the pulse. Because if you see that your pulse is too slow or too fast, that's important too. Now, a lot of people have these machines which will take their blood pressure and pulse. That's another way.
Right, right. And that's very helpful. And again, if you're doing that, you should make yourself a little log. Just take a piece of paper and write down the date and the time. And if you do that, then you should be taking your blood pressure at the same time every day, if you can remember.
So the important things in congestive heart failure, don't forget to take your medications. That's very important. Take them at the appropriate time prescribed. If you don't take your medicine or you don't want to, don't double up. Call your physician or your healthcare provider. Number two, sodium. Watch the salt. Very important. If your doctor orders blood work on you, get your blood work done. We're checking for your sodium in your blood, your potassium. We're checking also the kidney function, what we call the creatinine. So if that creatinine number goes up, that means that those kidneys are not functioning. Remember, all your organs communicate with each other. And we have to check your potassium. If you're on a diuretic like Lasix, you may be throwing out potassium in your urine. You might want to also eat potassium-rich foods like potatoes, sweet potatoes,
bananas.
Spinach, bananas, cantaloupe, mangoes, plantains, dry beans, peas, lentils, low-fat or fat-free milk and yogurt, lean meat, and poultry and fish. Very important. And be organized with your medications. I read this one booklet, and it says, don't take your medicines in the dark.
Oh, we just heard that story.
We don't want to take our medicines. And well, yes, quit smoking. It's never, never, never too late.
Right.
Never too late. The gift of life is you have to quit smoking. Watch your fluid intake. Eat less fat and cholesterol. Try, if your doctor says you can exercise, continue to walk. Limit your alcohol or no alcohol, because alcohol can slow your heart rate and can worsen your heart failure. It also may interact with the medications you take. Reduce your caffeine intake. For those people with congestive heart failure, caffeine can speed up your heart and may also cause, in some people, heart rhythm problems. So, if you should exercise, again, this needs to be prescribed by your physician. If you're on oxygen and your doctor says, stay on oxygen, need to listen. You need to also try to prevent infections. If you see a cut and it's starting to get red, again, contact your doctor. Keep washing your hands. Soap and water is the best prevention. Good dental care. We've got to keep our teeth nice and clean. Please, right now, anyone know that this is a time to get your flu shot. The flu shots are out. Get your flu shot. Why would you want to get the flu and throw your heart over the edge? You don't want to do that. Get your pneumonia shots. Stay away from people who are really sick. Wash your hands. Also, get plenty of rest. You might need to rest in between in the day. Try to keep your emotional health in a good place. What does that mean? We've had a program, we had a guest about meditation. Maybe you need to go to a support group to talk to other people about congestive heart failure. What say you, Dr. Katzen?
Well, yes. And one of the things is that sometimes people get congestive heart failure for reasons which are very, very strange. A lot of people, there's a strong feeling that acute congestive heart failure may be related to a virus that causes upper respiratory tract infections. Some people have a congenital variation that causes congestive heart failure. Some dogs have it.
WCCF, Punta Gorda, Port Charlotte. Coming to you from the Grand Air Services Studios. Award-winning air conditioning, refrigeration, and appliance repair in Southwest Florida.